Good evening. Thank you very much for having me, or for having Oren and me here tonight. Just before I start, I point out that we have a bag of Seven Towers t-shirts to give away. First come, first served. I don't know what size they are. I don't know how many. Yeah, anybody can have them. I don't know how many there are. But they're there in this green bag out here, so the sharpest elbows get their first. Right, as most published poets will know, you spend a long time before your book's published agonising over the order of the poems, and it's very important for sequence and so on when it comes to reading and discipline, or you make very structured decisions. Tonight I'm going to read from the front half of the book. And as you may have noticed, I don't sound like part of the poetry establishment in Ireland, and generally I don't write on those concerns. So the first one is the first book in the collection called This Voice. This voice is not the voice of the Academy. The voice of the Academy is cooler in tone, mildly sardonic, demotically detached, possibly abstract, but with allowance for the landscape of a ghostless heritage in hot thatch, hero streams, blood is wills, and the rocky foreshores of the numinous. Embracing chance, arising the carnal, on a good day, the spiritual. Few conclusions, but staggering under the implications. Me, I'm like clay. I like to take the word for a walk. First time I read that, I read that adapted quote from the Swiss painter Paul Klee, like to take a line for a walk. And I said, I'm like clay, I like to take the word for a walk. And someone said, well, he calls himself Muhammad Ali now, not clay. It's really better, it was actually much better. Okay, the next one, given the fine summer that we've had, although I missed most of it, I was away, is a kind of upside-down environmental poem, I suppose. In New Zealand, we had a long struggle through the 1960s and 70s with the implications and morality of hydroelectric power, a very clean power source, but you have to sacrifice significant amounts of heritage environment. There were a lot of stories about what happened in people's homes and farms and houses were flooded and they had to move on. Maybe if you look at it the other way, if you have a dam for 200 years, what happens when it goes? So in honour of the 2008 summer, this is called After the Dam Broke. We are no longer still water people, but still water people for all that. For all that is gone, dripping off the years, years of anger and doubt, of flood and loss, love and blood and pain, and then the years of drought. For all that we stand for, standing still, 40 feet above the water, still 4 feet above where the water used to be. I guess for the 10th anniversary of the Oma bombing, conflict is still a large topic of public discourse within Ireland. In New Zealand and Australia, and I was just in Australia and did a reading and found that I didn't have to walk people through this so much, but our common cultural experience of the 20th century is that of the return soldier, that was sending generations of our young men away somewhere to die, and some of them coming back, some of them not, and maybe coming back to something which wasn't what they went away to fight for, and maybe coming back as people that those remaining didn't expect. And this is from a novel by the New Zealand novelist Elizabeth Knoxon, based on it, called After Dead Hour. Based on letters from soldiers who drove through the war home, and it's called Crossing the Saddle. It's about returning. The land of craters and lumps the eye. Vision lifts with ghosts and husks of men. Mist thickens trenches and ridges ground our waiting senses. Trees hanging every breath. Left, our women linger. Futures torn and choices shorn by loss of nationhood. A terrible century. What remains is release, home over the saddle. We emerge to a stained time, stumble, washed and stiffly. Sympathy, the mist we live in. The land itself is steep and clean, a lean religion, a cradle from the grave. For some of you who can't sing, and it's true there are people who can't sing, I've written quite a few poems about music. Although this is, I don't write love poems, I like regret poems, apology poems, Thanksgiving poems, I think, in some cases. But this is about being left behind. It's Rag for the Left. To syncopate, to play your mind in eye socket, jelly roll to jazz to steel tears, down on cymbal cheeks, tin pan alley tap and tapping, huffing and a brushing with death and death, and the snare drum rattle, the picture is mine in my head, cause when you do 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 right by me, I can let you die, you see you live in my mind, my shouts, my fears, and I can still smell you after all these years, and if you were dead instead, it would be better than hearing you're alone. And speaking of Oma, this is something, this is my green poem actually, it's taken many forms and I've recycled it constantly. And I come from an island nation, and I think there are a lot of issues that are pretty similar, particularly the ability to divide in any given community. I don't want to lecture people, I suppose. I don't know, maybe I do want to lecture people. Towards a civil peace. Well, this is it, the big one. You will take over these Septembered Isles. No longer can our few million hide behind a drum or the tail of a plane, a dream, a song, a piece of cloth. No more issues. We know the issues. The team becomes the focus of your hate when it's the supporters you despise. The flag becomes the focus of your love, and the flag is not made of flesh or rock or dirt or blood. No more now, no more folding your soul over, spending your youth in memory of youth spent success. No more hearts trudge, minds trudge, lied minds trudging, lost and wasted. Flesh, eyes, knees, oracles, words and ears of others burning with difference, the incendiary device, and I mean vice. No more never, no more, no more, no more flags for everyone in the audience to pull ourselves apart, no words to betray the music, no music for the words to betray us. For you must ignore the origins, stare through the spiritual, for he so loved God he gave his many unbegotten sons and sold out on the living one syndrome and chant your head off anyway. Seek your truth, your chant, your head, nothing to kill for and no one to die. Your head, your chance, your own true, red, broken, red, red heart, and relent. Now here's a very serious poem. The title poem, when I wrote this, I thought it was the only ode anyone had ever seen to butchers. But since I've written it, it's clear that virtually everyone's written one. We're about halfway through our revolutionary cycle as human beings, and it's been a bit accelerated by our access to a variety of food, including first-class protein, which has enabled us purely on a nutritional level to spend less time seeking food and more time doing other things, like shooting each other and buying and selling shares. So it's all been good and worthwhile. Anyway, this is my tribute. As a child in New Zealand, as a small child, it was still pre-supermarket. So you go with your mother to the various shops, including the butcher. And in New Zealand, we had a thing called a saveloy, which is kind of like a huge pink sausage full of bread. And the butcher would always give a child coming into the butcher shop a saveloy, and you'd eat it on the spot. So it's only in later years I started to think, well, maybe eating raw sausage meat might be doing to you, but we seem to survive it. But the skill of a butcher, because human beings are generalists, we're not particularly good at anything. We're in particular not very good at digesting food, which is why we can eat a wide variety of foods. And for us to eat meat, it really has to decay a little bit. We can do this by cooking with the process of decay, but a good butcher lets meat rot. Before they sell it, they hang it. And the Elizabethans for game birds just used to tie a string around the pheasant's neck, and when the pheasant hit the floor, it was ready to go, which might be about right for us now. But still, the gentle art of rotting has built us, yet stands lost to all but a small cadre of the gifters. The trade a bloody sneer, journeyman slides a minor insult, but this the worst of abuse, the butcher of, you name a troubled spot, and this rotting world fairly unfair for men who whistle at work, the world. I've known a few in their time no better, or worse is redder and better fair, cleaner running than most their generous empires. With pride we find in things well done, a jointed beauty, a rare beast. There are graces we fall between. This is solid grace for a better world. If I could whistle, I might have been one. I was just talking before, at Seven Towers we do a lot of reading, and I think all of us probably see reading as an essential part of editing, in that, you know, your voice isn't a metaphor, it's something that should be reflected in the way you write. So I'm going to test run a poem I wrote. Now that I've lived here for nearly 20 years, I felt I had the right to adapt a traditional Irish form, the Ashley. Last night I dreamed that I was dead, or rather, that I would be dead, doing what I was doing, where I was, in the dream. I woke convinced that I was dead, or that I would be dead, if the dream continued. My wife asked if I was all right, as wives do. I was not. Wandering the house at 2 a.m. just to stay alive. Thank you. They're not all grim. I didn't read the cancer poems and the psychosis poems. But the last one is a bit of a party piece. My hearing's not very good, industrial deafness, so I tend to have to watch people's mouths. So in conjunction with Seven Towers, I'll give you, now don't try this at home, but this is the Seven Towers Guide to Lip Reading. Reading lips, writing lips, speaking lips, signing lips, using lips, lip use, lip service, paying lip service, paying for lip service lips, in service lips, self service lips. These lips have done some service for the state. Lip ego, lip id, lipidity, lipid lowering agent, lip lowering agent, lower lips, upper lips, the lips that dare not speak their name. Hounded lips, rounded lips, eclipse of the sun, the moon, the world, world of lips, people lips, worker lips, supporting the cause of international labia, fraternity, equality, liberty. Equal lips, equivalent lips, ambivalent lips, lip rejection, never lips, nether lips, leather lips, crack lips, burnt lips, chapped lips, smack lips, thick lips, thin lips, stick lips, lipstick, lip, lick, lip, lips, a lip of the tongue, a Freudian emphasis, slip lips, clip lips, hearse lips, curse lips, apocalypse. Now and again, damned from lips to eternity, tainted lips, sainted lips, church lips, chapel lizard lips, leaks lip, lip of rock, Arkansas lip of ages, lip of faith, lip of the Arctic, lip of the yard, polyps, coral, nasal, intestinal, med lips, red lips, cred lips, the lips formerly known as Prince. Bill lips, bull lips, spare lips, bear lips, beer lips, the lips that cheer but do not intimidate, lips that have touched alcohol but still won't touch mine, missed lips, kissed lips, nearly kissed lips, wish we kissed lips, wish we didn't, parting like lips in the night, dream lips, young lips, the interpretation of lips, lip interpreter, lip reader. Well done, you are now reading lips. Okay, I was much younger when I wrote this and I had a lot bigger lung capacity, I think. When I first started reading in Wellington with a friend of mine, Michael Eager, we like to give a gift to the audience at the end for their patience. A poem by somebody else's voice, which a contrast to yours, and maybe something that you would be unlikely to come across. This is from an Australian poet called John B. Lee, who I know nothing about. All I could find in my research was John A. Lee, the New Zealand novelist. But still, it's close. And sometimes a poem can just take you into a moment, and the stillness of it, you're held there. And I think this is one of these poems. My father reached in through the car window, reached in with his voice, calm and stretched out like a tired man in a bath, reached in with words, rhythmless as a tap, running a tough, full, slow and easy and tepid, reached in to where the scrawny, limpid drunk was strangling Murray, holding him down on the front seat and choking him, slowing his breath to choppy little gulps. And my father just eased his voice along each arm, slacking it to the fingertips as if he were just calling off a dog. And Murray rolled out from under the basket, alive and startled by it, took one swig from the whiskey thermos on the floorboard, and that was that. Thank you very much.